am sitting down. We are doing our behind the scenes with Mr. Jonathan McLearning. I love that. I got to tell you, that right there really got me. That hits me. I love that piece. I want to kind of give you a little bit of chance to kind of share about you a little bit before we even jump into the interview piece, just something about you. So I know you're in Canada right now, and I got to tell you, your backdrop gorgeous. So lovely.
Yeah.
Right now, but what is the real temperature behind all of this?
Well, for the American viewers, I'm going to say it's probably about 36 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's about 2 or 3 degrees Celsius right now. It's going to get warmer, okay. But we probably had our first frost of the season. So we live very close to the Rocky Mountains, and that means we can get quite significant temperature fluctuations. Sometimes we can get a hot wind off the mountains called a Chinook, and that can raise the temperature up to 20 degrees. But we can also get cold winds off the mountains that can suddenly drop the temperatures really rapidly, and we could get a freak snowfall like in August. So generally speaking, like, we have pretty normal summers and stuff, but it's just being near the mountains, there is unpredictable weather patterns sometimes. So.
Okay, so for people like me, to see all this beautiful scenery, we definitely will have to catch it another time. But it's a little warmer for me.
Yeah.
But I think it's gorgeous, though. Just hearing you talk about it sounds amazing. The Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, we have these beautiful, like, teal-colored glacial lakes. And, again, they look absolutely gorgeous, but if you were to step into them, they're frigid. They are just above freezing because they're fed from glaciers. So if you like ice baths, you wouldn't mind swimming in these lakes.
You know what? Give me my nice little hot beach anytime. I'll take that anytime. So I love that you're going to be coming on, you're going to be talking to us. You're going to be sharing your story of what I call from trauma to triumph. So that's I'm looking so forward to. So listen, y'all got to stay tuned. This was just a little quick behind the scenes. I want you to kind of come check out Mr. McLearning, and he can share his whole story with you. We're just going to get in just a little bit, but I got to tell you, I'm loving the whole thing. So make sure you catch me online at PatriceBrantley.com. Make sure you also tune in for the podcast, The Patrice Brantley Show. Hey, y'all. Welcome to The Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of the game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Have you had a chance to check out the baddest book out here? It is Trauma and All Their Cousins. Honey, make sure you grab your copy and make sure you get a friend for that friend who stays in her drama and bringing you her trauma. All right, let's get on into this. Today, we are talking to Mr. Jonathan McLearning, who is and talking to us today about his amazing life story from truly the comeback kid in my eyes. I love his story. His story is a story and a journey that takes you from the trauma to the triumph. And it actually takes you from that point, from what happens from when you say, hey, I want to own my own business, to, hey, maybe this wasn't my problem, to I'm coming back and I'm making it happen. So go ahead, y'all. Y'all welcome Mr. Jonathan in. Welcome, 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 welcome.
I like to say to people, make sure you take your hands out of your pockets before you start clapping.
That way we all can make sure we hit a clap.
Yeah.
So what I love about this is that your story on so many levels is a comeback story. Like, I feel like this is that comeback story, especially for people who are jumping into businesses. In the midst of this pandemic, everybody has been on this, have you followed your dream? Are you following your vision? And I just want you to share today with us the full story of being a entrepreneur and what it looks like. I want to kind of go back a little bit, and I know it kind of sounds a little sour, but I want to talk about your first business. In your first business, one, did you follow your passion? Two, what did it look like in those first couple of days, months, and years for you?
Yeah, well, the first business I had, I have two failed businesses in my background, actually. The first one was not actually following my passion. It was an idea that we thought would make money. So it was in Alberta, we're like the Texas of Canada. So oil and farming and that kind of stuff. So we, a guy, a friend and I set up a light oil field hauling company. We call it Hotshot Hauling. So that's where you're not big enough to be driving a tractor trailer, but we had, say, an F450 dually and a gooseneck trailer. You haul stuff because you're a little bit more lightweight. You can haul stuff a little faster. But so we spent the money to get everything kind of set up. And unfortunately, his infant daughter passed away at 6 months old. And so he kind of fell off the deep end there. And it was like, well, looks like this isn't happening. So, yeah, nothing in life really prepares you for that sort of stuff, you know?
I love how you talked about for that moment that, you know, because everybody talks about that. Did you follow your passion? And you said, you know, I'm going to keep it truly real in my world. It wasn't about the passion. It was about the money. And yep. A lot of people won't admit that. I don't know why people won't admit it. We all know what the deal is. Just admit it. But I always believe that whether you're doing it for the money or for your passion, there should be impact. And I know for you, in this process, you know, you talked about in that first one, yeah, it was about making that money, but, you know, life happened. Yeah. And, you know, it's a very big one when people don't realize life happens and it affects others.
Yeah, and I believe these things happen for a reason. Like, I'm not angry about it. Like, that one only cost me about 25 grand. I say only. It's not like that's chump change. But the money that we invested in setting everything up, only to have my, you know, and okay, here's why it's actually a blessing in disguise. It turns out the guy that I was in business with, the guy that I thought I was friends with, he had a second life that I didn't know about.
Whoa.
Yeah. So our business, yeah. So the business failed. And, you know, about a year later, I was in my second business, which we can get into what that is later, but I was in my second business and, the police came up and they said, we're looking for Jonathan McLernan. I'm like, yeah, that's me. Like, all right, cool. You got a couple minutes. We just need to ask you a few questions. And, they started asking me about my former business partner. And I was like, well, I haven't seen this guy for over a year. You know, we parted ways after this tragedy occurred. And, I said, is there something going on that I need to know about? And they said, do you read the news? Do you look at the newspaper? I was like, nah, not really. You know, I like to be positive and read the news makes me feel angry. So I don't. they said, we should see the front page of today's paper. And there's a U-Haul outside his house and the chief of police and the mayor. And it was the largest drug and gun bust in the history of our city.
Not the front door. You're literally in bed with the kingpin as a job venture over here. And none of this came up. No suspicious behaviors, nothing.
You know, I mean, if I was to look back, there probably were a few clues. But, like, here's the thing. People seem to, because of the way that TV makes people look, you know, that, oh, they're just going to be like this, you know, square-jawed, angry-looking, whatever. He's a normal-looking dude, had a normal job, had a normal family. Like, you would, normal house in a normal neighborhood. Like, you wouldn't think twice. That's how these people actually operate. It looks nothing like on TV.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I'm going to use this to add in two little moments. So the first thing I want to kind of talk about is in this piece, media had given you an image that did not fit your experience. And then two, really knowing who you're jumping in the bed of partnership with. That's a big thing in business because a lot of people just go, this is a door. They're going to invest in me. They're going to help me. They're going to push me. And when you get to that door, you're going, who did I jump in the bed with? Like, maybe we're not on the same page. So that right there, I mean, for me, that's a whole big experience. Oh, my gosh. So yeah, after the kingpin got busted, what happened? Pick up. I got to know.
Well, thankfully. So what they were looking for was, did he launder money through our company? Whoa. That's what they were looking for, right? Because he also had a construction company. And, yeah, because that one's common. Like, yeah. We got to, because that's one of the easier businesses to launder money through, in a sense, right? There's ways to do that. And thankfully, because, you know, we'd spent all this money setting it up, and then this tragedy struck, like, there wasn't the opportunity to start laundering money through this company. Hadn't made any money yet. So it probably saved me from criminal prosecution.
Wow. So that right there is strike one.
Yeah.
In this world. That to most people would have been like, you know what? I'm packing up my bat. I'm packing up my ball. I'm out of here. Business is not for me.
Yeah.
It's 8 to 6 and we're going to keep pushing.
Yeah.
So I this is awesome. Go ahead.
yeah. So I mean, we just kind of parted ways, so I knew nothing about this. I'd even been in his house. He didn't take me a tour of his house, so I don't know where he was hiding this stuff. But wherever he was hiding it, he was doing a very good job of it. There really was nothing to make you think that this is the double life that he was living. But that's what that's what I'm like. You don't go into a relationship with a human being thinking, oh, this guy's probably running guns and drugs. That's what he wanted to use his hauling company for, was to move shipping containers of this stuff. And I would have, could you imagine if I'd been hauling this container thinking I'm just hauling, someone's, I don't know, equipment or something like that to this job site. And in actual fact, what I'm doing is hauling this load of contraband. Like, oh my gosh. And then I get pulled over and, they open, like, things could have gone like so much worse. So, I mean, I'm a man of faith. I believe in God. And you know what? I mean, I believe in that experience. That was a very big learning experience for me because I'm naturally a pretty trusting guy. Like, I don't walk through this world with this lens on that probably everyone here is a sociopath trying to rip me off. And it wasn't that he was trying to rip me off, but, and sometimes I wonder if this guy had a little bit of a conscience or something, because I look back at some of the things he said. He's like, John, you're a really good guy. You should be careful. The world isn't a nice place.
Wow. So wait a minute. Even the crook in this is warning you in his own way and going, you might want to take your blinders off, John. This is not exactly, rose-colored world. We're not all having cream and ice cream and peaches and creams all day. So it's
Yeah.
amazing. Oh my gosh. This right here is enough. Like, but I can't stop right here.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This right here is definitely one of those God protects those who have those moments. My common statement is God protects babies and fools. And I know for me, I'm no longer 6 months, so I pay the fool a lot of times. Okay, so I just believe that He protects His children in ways that we'll never know. And then after this, you go, no, all right, this is what happened.
Yep.
Let's try this again. So we're starting the
Yeah.
next business.
So now I've got another friend. I'm like, man, I have a good choice in friends, like in hindsight. This is a guy that I've known for a couple of years, married guy, Christian man, upstanding marriage, that kind of thing, successful in one of his other businesses. He just looked like he had it all together. The perfect house, the perfect wife, the perfect marriage, Christian man, successful businessman, all these things. And we'd been friends for a couple of years. Anytime I needed something, he's always there, able to help me out, that kind of thing. And so he was having a struggle with his business, which was a nutrition and supplement store. And that was right up my alley, actually, because my educational background is chemistry and marketing. And yeah. And so I ended up going into partnership with him because his partnership was failing. And he told me the whole sob story, everything went wrong with him and his partner and stuff. And I was like, man, like, this is a good business. I don't want to see this fail. So on my days off, because after my business failed, you lose a bunch of money. I had to go find a job. And,
I was going to say, because in this process, I'm sure money is not just like meeting you at the front door, like, hey, here I
there was no Brinks truck showing up being like, hey, we just wanted to drop a couple bags off for you, the abundance mindset sounds good, but it's like you actually have to get off your butt and do something.
Tell me about it. That's the part I think was the light bulb for me in this process. People talk about how easy it is, and the big thing for me when I hear the social media pieces, follow me and advertise this and do this and do that, and you're thinking, if I do that, I'm gonna blow up overnight, and then you realize not one thing is moving. Like, where do I go from this? What do I do?
Yeah. And just as a side note, like, every overnight success you meet has like 10 years of hard work behind them that they don't talk about, because it is more attractive to sell the story of the, oh, you get it, hey man, 12 weeks with me and I'm going to turn you into a six figure business. Like, yeah, probably not. Yeah, it's probably not.
Here's my thought in it. If it comes fast, it leaves fast.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to be that business and that business person who sustains. You want to be able to stand the test of time no matter how the winds blow.
Yeah. So I get into business with this next guy, and it's, I mean, it's a great fit for me. I'm passionate. I mean, I've been on my own weight loss journey. I'm still on this journey, but I'm passionate about it. Well educated. Like, this is a really great fit. It started out helping him part time because I worked a rotation, we call it. So 15 days on, 6 days off. So 15 days in the oil patch, as we call it. That's where you're working out where the oil fields are, where they're drilling or pumping or fracking or whatever. So I was, operating, driving big trucks and operating equipment. because it pays well, and I needed to pay down some debts.
Hey, I understand that.
And so, I was totally debt free and made some good money. And I thought, well, I want to do something with my money. I don't just want to sort of sit on it and watch inflation make it disappear. And along comes this opportunity to invest in this business. And with somebody who I thought I knew, 2 years being friends, like trusted, well respected, all this kind of stuff. And probably the first year, nothing, there was no real flags or anything like that, but it starts small. Just little bits of responsibility that getting shirked and kind of getting dumped on my plate, getting guilted, and but I don't really know. Once again, you don't go into a business relationship like thinking I'm probably in business with a narcissist and a sociopath and a pathological liar. So I got my blinders on still, in one sense, because I'm like, this is my friend. He wouldn't do this to me. He's done plenty of nice things for me in the past. Looking back, I'm like, this is how narcissists work. They put you in their debt by doing small things for you. It'd be little things like, oh, I can't work this Saturday. He agreed to work. If you don't mind filling in for me. And then he would make sure he drops off a coffee for me. Hey, thank you so much for doing this for me.
So that, hey, I need you to do this for me, but I did this for you.
In a relationship, they call it love bombing. I'm like, I'm not sure what you call it in a friendship bombing, but it's this idea that like they take advantage of you and then they do this little nice thing to make you feel good. See, I'm an empath, and I'm empaths are like perfect prey for narcissists. It's
Go a little deeper about what impasse is. I know what it is, but I want to hear how you share it with other people.
in a sense, it's like the ability to feel others' pain in my heart. In a nutshell, I've learned how to navigate that better in the work that I currently do. We might get to that, but in the work that I currently do. But and so a narcissist knows how to use people's emotions to manipulate them and steer them. And my wife spotted this well before I did. Like, this he's not holding up his end of the agreement very well. And I would justify it and make excuses for him and all of this. I was trapped, and but I didn't know it. Of course, all this is coming from hindsight. Looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was so many people. It's like, how could you not see it? Because you're not looking for it.
It's that thing of, like you said, this is my friend. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I say you're a friend to me, you're valued. That's not a word I use lightly. I don't just go, oh, this is so and so. Like, it's, no, if I say friend, you're like pretty much, you can walk in my house, go in my fridge, and then we're eating. And I'm okay with that. And I
Loyal. Yeah, I'm a very loyal friend. And so about 2 years into it, it was when it really started, things started to sort of unravel a little bit. And his marriage was starting to have difficulties. And ultimately his wife ended up leaving him. And it turns out, he's a serial, I think philanderer might be the word.
yeah.
Multiple affairs.
Oh, get down. I'm sure that didn't come up in conversation about the health food store, did it?
No. And when I look back, I go, I remember people telling me they saw him at the gym with his wife, and when they described his wife, I go, that's not his wife. But I was like, I was like, oh, maybe they just got the detail wrong or something like that. Like, just in my mind, I would just correct the story because I'm like, no, this isn't the guy that I know. He's a Christian man. He's married. He's upstanding. He's all this kind of stuff, and it's all a front. Because there's another thing about being Christian, is that generally speaking, people of faith are pretty open-hearted, and pretty open towards other people who seem to share a like faith. Well, this is also a perfect opportunity for pathological liars who like to manipulate people. We would wonder, and this is a bit of a side note too, I guess. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but you might look at a church and wonder how could this minister, this preacher, this, holy man do this or that, whatever, because they're a liar. The thing about a pathological liar is they lie without conscience. Like there's no tells, there's no flicker, because in their head, they're not lying.
Exactly. They believe exactly what they're telling you.
Yeah, the truth is relative. And so he could lie, the first time he lied to my face and I knew he was lying, it stunned me. I was like, I didn't call him out on it because I'm like, I'm just making a note of this now. are these things that people have been trying to, you know, hint at, like maybe something's amiss here. I had to all of a sudden, like, holy crap. This guy isn't who I think he is.
So hold on. This is now the second friend.
Yeah.
Second friend you've gone into these businesses with. You're now seeing that, yeah, maybe friendships and business don't work in this way. How did this start to affect you emotionally? Because I know for me, I would be like, okay, it's a wrap. Let's do this. How did that affect you emotionally? Did it deal and cause issues in other areas in your family, in your personal life?
Yeah, absolutely. I was, as I started to realize the situation I was caught in, I really turned a lot of my anger and frustration inward towards myself.
Wow.
How could I be so dumb? How could I not see this? I put so many hours into this business, sacrificing time away from my wife, trying to build an asset for our future. And so, I was having anxiety attacks on a regular basis because I was sleeping like 5 hours a night, training 2 hours a day, working 14 to 16 hours, trying to keep this business going and trying to really help it grow and putting my heart and soul into this. And then I have an amazing wife. She's an absolute rock and she's been with me through everything, you know. But it was a lot of frustration, anger turned inward. A lot of things connected to my own sense of self-worth. I'm really intelligent. And I say that, and I can say that now, feeling okay about it. For a long time, I never even could acknowledge that I don't get to take the credit. Like, I didn't buy this. I didn't earn this. I just got given this brain free of charge, you know? So I cannot take the credit, but I have a really, really good brain. I have a great memory for facts and numbers, a really analytical brain that's very good at creating efficient processes. And I seem to have got my mom's empathic creative heart as well. And so, you know, I'm a pretty capable guy. So kind of knowing this and going, how the heck did I not see this? How did this happen? And how did this happen a second time? And this time it cost me a lot more.
So this time it cost you a lot more. At this point, did you stop and say, okay, I either need to look at me or I need to look at them, or am I going to reach out and get some type of help? Like, did you do any type of therapy at this point, if I'm not being too personal?
No, it's fine. I'm an open book. So I had hired a coach. So we're going back to about 2017. Mm-hmm. I'd hired a coach because my weight, the stress of everything as I was starting to figure it out, had caused my weight to go back up to 285 pounds. Pardon me. And maybe an element of my story that, again, we probably don't have time to dive into today, but you know, about 10 years ago from the time of recording this, I'd went through trauma where I was nearly beaten to death when I was living in South Africa. And that had caused me to eat my trauma. I became a binge eating food addict and it caused my weight to balloon. This is prior to any of these business ventures. It was about 5 years after that I started getting to some of these business ventures. So I would, you know, that was something that I'd always kind of wrestled with after having gone through that trauma. So that there's another sort of confounding piece of the puzzle, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I still hadn't fully, like, maybe resolved all of the trauma. Like, I'd forgiven those who'd done what they did to me and so on. But I was really grappling with turning back to food. And one of the wake up calls was when I was purchasing some additional life insurance. And I had to have a medical assessment done, and they put what's called a rider on the policy. Yeah. Because I was considered high risk because I was obese and I had high blood pressure. And, you know, that was like the, oh my gosh, like I'm in my mid 30s. This shouldn't be happening, you know? Yeah.
Literally, for you, all of the stress of that one trauma led out and kind of attached, as I like to say, to the cousins.
I love that phrase, the cousins.
Literally, that's for me. When I think of the title of this book, Trauma and Their Cousins, I think about that one trauma in your life and all the things that attach to it, the cousins that come with it. Because when you go through a trauma, there's so many other things that attach that we don't think about. And hearing you talk about your story with food is a part of my story, because food is a good thing for me. I'm not a binge eater, but I'm an emotional eater. So if it ain't over here in the corner going, oh, we're making cookies tonight. And I'm making cookies and I'm eating cake. And I realized that. And it's just how you talked about, for you, that one trauma brought these other things connecting to it. And how you even talked about with the weight and the self-esteem. And then before you even got to the business piece, all of this wrapped up into this.
Yeah.
Okay, y'all, listen here.
Yeah.
Question now, but I mean,
there's more. You know,
there's so much more with this.
As I go back, I'm like, dang, this is like, because I just was chatting with a lady last night about this, and she wanted my life story too. And we were supposed to have a 15 minute chat, ended up being like an hour and a half. I was like, okay, we got some details to go into here. You know, but so all of these confounding factors are in place. So I'm kind of struggling with my mental health at this point. They struggle with my sense of self-worth. And then like as a man, here I am struggling with my mental health when I'm supposed to be the strong one, the provider, the protector, all this kind of stuff. And now I'm having anxiety attacks and I'm trying to hide that from my wife and, you know, trying to put on a brave face. And, you know, it was, you know, but it was when I hired a coach. I was like, okay, I need some help. I'm going to have to ask someone for help. So I hired a coach and it was probably the best thing I could have done. Because he was really another anchor for me as I was going through all of this, as all of this was starting to crumble. And I remember him asking me this question. It's a question that changed my life. He said, Jonathan, if you make a list of all the things you love and value, how far down that list do I go before I see your name?
Okay, I like him. That's one of my
questions. And that one just hit me like a ton of bricks. Because in my sphere of consciousness, in my sense of identity, in my realm of belief, I was not on that list. So he opened my mind by asking this question to the possibility that I'm allowed to be on this list of things I love and value, let alone somewhere near the top. So it really, now when we get into things like our sense of identity, I mean, it was really, at first, it was very confronting or jolting to my sense of identity. So I was acting out these beliefs that I'm not good enough, that I'm a failure, that I'm a loser, you know, and all of these things. And so when he asked that question, like, it was really confronting because I was like, no, you don't get it. I'm worthless. And I really believed that, you know, like, and it's so interesting to look back knowing where I am now and the place that I'm in. I'm in a really good place now, but I was in that place. And he gave me the space to wrestle with my demons in the light.
Whoa. Ooh, what a powerful statement. Do you realize that's a powerful statement?
Yeah.
The belief that I could wrestle with my demons in the light. Because I find that so many of us hide so much, or we don't want to give the world our flawed us. Let me say that. I don't want to say we hide. I say we don't give everybody the flawed us. Like, you know how people always say, well, this is my good side. No, I need to see the whole picture. Put your face in front. You know, that thing. You want to know all of that person. And I think that, that's a power statement. Okay, listen. So you know up front, I'm stealing that one.
Oh, yeah. By all means. It's what I tell my clients too. When I work with them, I said, you know, I will never use your struggles as ammunition against you because that does not help you grow and change.
No, it does not. And I wish people knew this. So wait a minute. You have not taken me from the beginning of these businesses, how you had to change not just you, but the emotional pieces that went along with your change, the physical pieces in your change. Bring me to the upside. I'm loving this. I got so much life and light right now. Hello, honey. How are you doing it?
Oh, yeah.
About this upside, because your glow right now is so beautiful. Hearing the story and then now seeing the, you're giving me life. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I look back on this experience with gratitude. You see, maybe because sometimes there's a temptation that we wish that God would just send a lightning bolt down from heaven and magically change our circumstances. And that's not how God works. We have to be an active participant in our own growth and development. And there's the desire to have someone else do the work for us. I mean, this is why we buy fad diets and magic pills and slimming shakes and belly wraps and stuff like that. Because we don't want to be an active participant because it's uncomfortable. The process of growth by nature is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So, and it's almost impossible to do alone. You know, when I finally opened up to my wife and told her the things I was struggling with, you know, it was my sense of identity that stopped me from speaking out to her. I was like, if she hears this stuff, she's going to think I'm a loser and I'm weak and I'm a failure. But that was me taking my insecurities and projecting them onto her. And when I opened up, she's like, I know.
Wow. Wait a minute. So when you finally sat down and said, let me share what's going on, she was like, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know your wife, but shout out to your observant wife. And saying, she's amazing. You know what? This is what's really going on. And I'm going to stay here with you and ride till the wheels fall off because I believe in you.
Yeah, she does.
Oh my gosh. Love her.
Yeah. And you would, if you met her, you want to hug her right away because she just has that energy about her. So.
Yeah, already, and I don't even know her.
You know, she didn't reject me. You know, she said, it's okay. I'm with you till we die. Like, that's it. When we married, we set our vows till death do us part, and both of us mean it. And so I am fiercely loyal to her because of this. Yeah. And so, you know, she said, you know what to do, and you'll find your way out of this. Like, it's going to be hard, but I know you can do this because I know you. And so when I was lacking at this point, like my self-belief was shattered. I was like, here now I've got two business failures, struggling with my mental health and, you know, daily panic attacks and then depressive episodes that follow because you redline your nervous system and then it's got to go down into this low energy state. You know, it was never suicidal, but it was really bleak and dark sometimes. And, you know, even praying about it, like, why? I don't want this, you know, but it's like we have to be, or maybe I should speak for myself. I had to be brought to the end of myself. And if I look back, this has happened in my life multiple times where I was brought to the end of my ability. You know, I was nearly beaten to death. I lost my life savings, my mental health. I was in a really dark place so that I would finally ask for help.
I love that because you talk about asking for help. And that's the hardest step for anybody. I don't care where you've been, what you've done. That right there. Above having to apologize, I think it's bigger than that, being able to say, I need help, especially for males, when the world says, nope, men's supposed to have this, y'all supposed to make it work, y'all are the one. And when y'all finally say, hey, I need help, having someone to say, I hear you.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It is. It really shifted my idea of what being a man looks like. Wow. You know, I had this, I don't know, this, very like stoic, like don't show emotion other than anger. My wife used to tease me and call me the Tin Man, but she knew that that wasn't me, you know, but because I'm really an empath, I just have this huge heart of caring for people. And she knew that. And that's one of the reasons why she stuck with me, because she could see like beyond sort of this Tin Man exterior that I would put up.
So what I'm loving about what you're telling me is not just your wife, but I love this piece that there was more to your story. So after the trauma, after the hurt, after the pain, after the lost weight and the lost money, we're coming up on the upside now.
And we are.
I want to get into this triumph piece. What is that triumph? Yeah. You have been in the valley low. What is it like at mountaintop?
So here's the shift. So a bailiff showed up at our business. This is the, you know, and he said, rent hasn't been paid for like 4 months. So I don't know what my business partner's been doing. I don't know where that money's been going. And so I told him the sob story and said, you know, because what they do when a bailiff comes in is they're basically seizing everything. Mm-hmm. It's a legal order. And so I told him my sob story. And basically, because they would have seized all the assets in the store. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, I'm going to come back in 2 hours. What it was, I was the procurement manager for the store.
Okay.
So I was the purchaser. And so I removed all the stock that I'd purchased. Everything was invoiced. Everything was, you know, I had all the records. I made sure that everything was on the up and up. And I removed everything that I had purchased. And that's what kept me afloat and helped me stave off bankruptcy, is being able to sell these products from my basement, you know, to... Because I'd paid for all these products. I'd purchased them. Mm-hmm. Normally what you do is you buy it wholesale, sell at retail, and you know, with a markup. Excuse me. And so that was like, but really I remember walking across the parking lot. So he's put a lock on the door. We only had one car because my wife and I live fairly frugally. Okay. So I'm walking across the parking lot and I'm like, what am I going to say to my wife? You know, all like 3 years of my life poured into this business, like giving everything I have to try and make it work. And we had, not only do we have nothing to show for it, like we have debt, a mountain of debt. And, but ironically, part of the reason why, like, so, because it was about from October to May, so October of 2017 to about May 2018 when it got closed down, I kind of knew the writing was on the wall, but I was like, I'm going to keep working this business to try to get something out of it. So I stayed stuck in this situation longer than I needed to because I was trying desperately to get something out of it. And when it got shut down, that was it. Boom. Cut the cord, end of story, you're not getting anything out of it. And so there's a sense of loss and grief from that. Lost time, lost opportunity, lost money, different future. Good luck buying a house when you've lost that much money. You know, that's this kind of stuff, right? But the other side of it is kind of like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I'm not trapped anymore. Wow. I can really do what I want and pursue that thing that I've been scared to pursue. And it sounds
scared to pursue.
Well, really, being a coach. Okay. Now I you know, I'm a nutritionist. I'm a nutrition coach. But I do like to say that nutrition is the cover story, just like weight loss is the cover story. People come to me and they say, I want to lose weight. I'm like, okay, I'll help you. Yeah. They think they need a meal plan, you know, tell me what to eat, tell me when to eat, tell me how to eat. Okay, we'll start there. Wow. But remember, nutrition is the cover story, just like weight loss is the cover story. Weight loss is a doorway, it's not a destination.
Wow, I like that. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, so we're a little more than, we're about 3.5 years after this business got shut down. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's important to highlight that it wasn't just like the skies opened and the angels were singing and, you know, rays of sunlight were beaming down on my face. It was like, no, it was hard. It was really hard because I couldn't really tell people what had happened because other people knew this my business partner in the community. Mm-hmm. So I really had to kind of keep my mouth shut. And so a lot of people didn't know what happened. You know, we're part of the same faith group. And so I just kind of, and I don't know what got said, but I just kind of had to shut my mouth and carry on and not say anything. And not only that, I had to forgive him. So forgiveness is really interesting. You know, I'd learned about forgiveness before because of the men that tried to beat me to death. If I wanted to be set free from that experience, I had to forgive them. That was a really, really hard thing to do. But I'd ultimately remember that this is not about me and it's not really about them. It's not absolving them. It's about setting myself free so that I'm no longer carrying this poison in my soul. And so I forgave him for everything I'd lost because I said, you know what? It was never really mine to begin with. We go through this life with a sense of entitlement, like, this is mine, I've earned it. I'm like, not really, because when you die, you don't get to take it with you.
Okay. I can tell you, I haven't seen anybody pack up behind no hearses and they have no ring strokes going with it.
Right. And so this sort of understanding helped me to come to the place of forgiveness. So now I got to start building my business from the ground up again. Like from, not just the ground up, from like a big old hole in the ground.
Oh, wow.
Right. So that feels really, really, in one sense, feels really daunting. But what it meant is I had to do this really like lean and efficient and bootstrapped and nothing fancy, no frills. But it's really about stripping business down to the core. What is business? It's an exchange of value. It's one person helping another person. And they're, because of that help, they're willing to give you money, which is just a medium. It's a medium. It's a placeholder. It's a holding of value, essentially. So they spend their time and expertise and whatever to earn money and then exchange that money for goods, you know, if we want to break it down. So business is about an exchange of value. So really, I just have to start helping people. All the fancy bells and whistles, website, logo, business name, all that kind of stuff is very secondary to, can you help me solve my problem?
Mm.
Okay. So
that is good.
Yeah. So the next thing I did was I started telling people my story and it scared the crap out of me because I was like, man, when people figure out, or when people learn my story, They learn about my failures and my struggles and my struggles with my weight. And when they find out that I don't look like a fitness model, like, because I was used to this Instagram, like, visual culture, you know, Everything looks perfect and flawless. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I compete with these shredded trainers? You know, it's like, you don't. The moment you try to compete with them, I'm like, no, that's not the game I'm in. So when I shared my story, the first time, like, I was so scared to click post, the outpouring of, like, love and support, the exact opposite of what I thought was going to happen. People were like, oh my gosh, this guy's human. He understands. He gets us. This is my clients tell me, like, you're human. We get it. Like, you understand us because you've lived this and struggled this. It's not like I woke up and just, like, walked, strutted around with this flawless physique, you know, follow my meal plan and training plan. You're going to look ripped and shredded. No. Like, I'm going to tell you the reality of having been obese, what it's like, and how I have to keep it at bay every day for the rest of my life. Because I say fat cells are the gift that keeps on giving. They're always there waiting to be filled.
Very true. I love it. I love just the authenticity of you just sharing you. And I love how you said, I didn't have to look like the rest. And I kind of walk into this thing that I don't have competition. I am my own competition. Yeah. And my goal is to be better from the day before. And I think it's wonderful. Hold on, because I need you to shout out this here, please. Tell us your business name. We need some deeds, because, hey, I need to get some stuff worked out. So.
Yeah. So Freedom Nutrition Coaching is my business, or freedomnutritioncoach.com. And I also have a podcast now called Wellness Unplugged. And the theme of Wellness Unplugged is we're disconnecting from the fake glitz of social media. And we're going to talk about between the before and after. We're going to talk about scars and all, the human journey and the human struggle to try and better ourselves and grow and change. And we're not going to mince words. We're not going to hide the warts. We're going to talk about what this is really like. So that's, and actually there's a second piece that I am, that's not yet public. What I'm actually looking for is to take one person through my program called Lifestyle 180. It's a 180-day program. And we're going to tell the story in real time. Every week is a check-in, but it's going to be a podcast episode. It's like a reality TV or reality podcast, except it's real life. It's nothing scripted. So I'm going to walk somebody through Lifestyle 180. They're going to hear me coach them in real time. They're going to watch the journey in real time. We're not going to hide things, struggles, weight regain, all that kind of stuff. It's all going to be there because I want people to see what it really looks like. Because it's, you see it before and after and you think, oh my gosh, ding, our brain lights up. All I got to do is this one little thing. It's like, no, there's a lot of work. You have to have a reason why you want this. And I call it like your emotionally compelling reason. So for me, I got a 6-month-old son. He's the most beautiful little boy in the world. Just very sweet natured. Like, we feel incredibly blessed. He's just the cutest. Of course, I'm his dad. I'm ever so slightly biased, you know, but just he is the cutest, sweetest little boy. He really is. You know, he's teething right now. And even in pain, he'll look up and smile at us when he sees us. And it just melts my heart. So I'm 39. I'm not a young dad. You know, I'm going to be 40 and he's going to be 1. And guess what those little legs want to do? They want to run
and take off and enjoy life. He's going to want to check this place out.
Yeah. And so when I want to, because I still have the urges to overeat, right? And I think it's important that people understand this. They see that I've lost the weight and they go, oh my gosh, like somehow it must be easy street. I'm like, no, no. The biological reality is if I eat like an undisciplined toddler, I will become obese again. That's the real story. And so I have to become, or I have to be what I call slim, but it's SLWM, successful long-term weight manager. Recognizing that for the rest of my life, I have to manage my weight carefully. And this isn't to shame anybody for carrying extra weight or anything like that or any of these. No, if I become obese, I can't play with my kid. I can't get down on the floor. I can't run after him. I can't scoop him up. Daddy's back hurts. Daddy's knees. No. I don't want to be a sideline dad. I want to be present, physically present in his life, not just on the sideline of the couch being like, sorry, daddy doesn't have the energy. That's my why, you know?
I love your why. Listen, y'all, we could be here all day. He is feeding me like a fat girl, and y'all know fat stands for fabulous. Okay, so don't get it twisted. So
I love that.
To let him go, he is giving us some good stuff, and he definitely will be back because this 180 sounded good to me. So y'all know how this do. Thank y'all for tuning in for the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of our game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. All right, so I am here with Mr. Jonathan McLearning, and we're doing our behind the scenes. And I got to tell you, I just had an amazing time during the podcast with him. When I tell you, he just gave me complete joy. And I loved how he shared a little bit about being an older dad. Now, y'all know my story. I have raised communities of babies, but I have yet to pop one. So I want to hear from his side and his view. What does it mean to be an older dad? What does it mean for you?
Well, like I started at 39. And so when I think about like being a dad, I thought in my life that I'd probably have a kid maybe in my late 20s or early 30s. I didn't expect that it would take until I was 39 before I got to be a dad. So what it means for me is I need to have a different mindset around I'm an older dad. In other words, I'm getting started older, but I don't have to be old. It means I need to really take care of my health, my mobility, my strength, manage my weight, because it's not that it's all downhill after 40. I'm really excited to get into my 40s. I think it's going to be a beautiful decade. There's this amazing sort of combination of like youth and life experience coming together, and the 40s is going to be a glorious decade. But I also recognize I don't have the same capacity to recover and bounce back from things kind of like I did in my early 20s. And so I have to be a little bit wiser about how I do things. I have to be a little more calculated, a little more thoughtful about it, because ultimately my driving motivation is I want to be physically present in my kid's life. I don't want to be a sideline dad. And it really colors everything that I do, is that I want to be able to be present in his life.
Wow. Okay, y'all. Give me life. Okay. Just give me. I am loving this. We're going to come back. We're going to tune back on in for another behind the scenes, because I definitely want to get into this. I don't know. I think I want to switch up my topic, y'all. I think about it. We'll come back and we'll talk about another segment of the behind the scenes. So we're back for another impactful behind the scenes with Patrice. We're with Mr. Jonathan McLearning. And I got to tell you, he's giving me so much good stuff about weight health and, you know, managing life. But I got to ask this before I let him go. What are the top five traits that anybody who's starting a business needs to have?
You know, I think number one is resilience. We love the idea of starting a business. Like, it sounds amazing. I'm gonna have this business and it's gonna make me a lot of money and I have all this time freedom. And yeah, maybe, maybe, but it's gonna be hard, because it's the 21st century. People are you know, they've been saturated with marketing and marketing messages. They're way more savvy. Like, you got to be willing to put in the hard work and be willing to struggle. I mean, heck, what about when a pandemic slammed your business? So I would say, like, really, resilience is going to be like your number one trait. Number two is time management. So the challenge in the 21st century is it's very difficult to switch off when there's a temptation to always be working. I run an online business. In fact, I run two. I could be working all the time, theoretically. So I plan in when I'm going to switch off, when I'm going to take baby breaks to give my wife a break, you know, when I'm going to turn off my phone, put it on airplane mode and say, nope, I'm switched on. You have to be able to switch off your business. And the ability to do that comes from time management. So actually plan out your time. And there's real freedom in that. I really want to emphasize there's freedom in time management. It's not about putting yourself in a structured prison. It's about time management creates freedom in your life. Number three, you have to have an idea that people are willing to pay for. Like, business exists to solve a problem, and it has to be a problem that's big enough that people are willing to part with their hard-earned money. There should be no sense of entitlement in a business. I'm such a great person. I have such a great idea. Why aren't people? They don't see the value in what you're doing. So you have to have a good idea. I think number four, you need to have a little bit of personality and the ability to communicate. So business in the 21st century involves being social. People want to see the human face behind the business. They want to see who is the real person. So I have a content strategy that I call ACE. It's authority, connection, and engagement. And authority is letting people know that you do have a degree of expertise around what it is that you're selling. Connection is about them getting to know you, the human being behind the business. People want to buy into that. They want to support businesses where they feel like they know the person behind the business. So then there's a trust factor there. And then engagement is just giving people reasons to connect and engage with your business in a fun and lighthearted way. What number are we on now? Was that number four?
We're heading to five.
We need number five. I'm like, what should the fifth one be? The willingness or the ability to delegate.
Wow. Love that.
Because again, when you start a business, you're probably going to be doing everything yourself.
Yep.
And the truth is nobody's going to have as much passion as you do for what your business is. And you're going to have to be okay with that, because if you try to continue to do everything and tightly, you know, this is your baby. You're never going to be able to develop any kind of freedom around that. So the willingness to let go of some of the control and to delegate.
I'm loving it. Listen, you have given me so many good tips over here. I'm taking notes as we go. I am excited. I love this, y'all. Please, y'all, make sure y'all go check out Mr. Jonathan McLearney. In addition to checking out Jonathan McLearney, y'all make sure y'all grab your copy of Trauma and All Their Cousins so that you can find out what's going on, how to deal with your trauma, remove those cousins of trauma out your life and all their nutty effects, and make things happen for you. All right, well, y'all know how this goes. Let's go out and be great, because we are great, and our greatness is now. It no longer awaits. Thank you, Mr. Jonathan McLearney. Thank you very much for joining us today.